Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, and welcome to our annual accounts press conference of BMW AG. I would like to welcome all those colleagues who have had a long trip to come here. We are very pleased to have journalists from 26 countries here today at BMW Welt. I would also like to welcome Manfred Schoch, the chairman of the Group Works Council of BMW AG, who has always been attending our annual accounts press conferences. Mr. Schoch, welcome. This conference, dear colleagues, will have a simultaneous interpreting service and will also be available on the internet later on. Today, as usual, we want to look back at our business year 2011, and at the same time, we will take an outlook on the future, of which you could also already convince yourselves in the foyer, because we have vehicles of all three brands or concept vehicles with electric drivetrains, the Mini E, the BMW Active E, and the Rolls-Royce EX. Let's come back to the present and in our new annual report that you've already received exists of two parts, the reporting part and the annual compendium, where we present real customers for whom taking over their newly bought car is always a moving experience. But you can read all this up. Dear colleagues, if I may present the members of the Board of Management. On my right-hand side, Dr. Norbert Reithofer, CEO of BMW AG. Next to him, Frank-Peter Arndt, Director Production. And next is Klaus Dräger, Development Director. And at the utmost right, Harald Krüger, Director for Human Resources and Works Council Affairs. On my left, Friedrich Eichener, CFO, Ian Robertson, Sales and Marketing, Herbert Diess for Purchasing and Supplier Network. As regards the usual procedure of this morning, first we will get a report from the CEO. This will be followed by Dr. Eichinger's presentation of the balance sheet in detail. And this will in turn be followed by a question and answer session. And you may, of course, address your questions to all the members of the board. This will be followed by a joint lunch together with the Board of Management in the foyer. If I may ask Dr. Reithofer to give us his statements on the business year 2011. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We move people, and we always think and act globally, with a long-term focus. It is, of course, our responsibility towards our shareholders and stakeholders. It is also a key part of our corporate culture. With our strategy number one, we are aligning the BMW Group with two targets: to be profitable and to enhance long-term value in times of change. And this applies to technological, structural, as well as cultural aspects of our company. Since 2007, we have been implementing various initiatives in keeping with strategy's four pillars: growth, shaping the future, profitability, and access to technologies and customers. Today, we are benefiting from our foresight. 2011 was the most successful business year to date in our corporate history. We achieved new record sales, revenues, and earnings. Already in 2011, we exceeded our profitability targets laid out for 2012. We are once again the leading premium automaker in terms of sales and the most sustainable car company in the world. What's important? We have a sound financial basis, which enables us to invest in future growth. And we deliver on our promises. As we see it, our success in 2011 is one step on our path towards the future. In 2016, BMW will be 100 years old. This is a historical milestone for our company. For all of us at the BMW Group, it is a responsibility and an obligation to ensure future success. Nevertheless, we are facing tremendous challenges. The world continues to change at a rapid pace. In many countries, individual mobility remains a focus of political regulation and national industrial policy. The shift in society requires new mobility solutions, and volatility has long become a constant in our everyday business. Markets and consumers alike remain uneasy about the significant public debt and the euro crisis. Given these developments, we carried out a strategic review in 2011. All trends were evaluated and our strategy was accordingly adapted. Based on our findings, we are now looking far ahead again. So what do we intend to achieve? More than 2 million cars sold in 2016. In the long term, we aim to reach an EBIT margin in the automotive segment in the range of 8 to 10%. Our clear vision for 2020 remains to be the leading provider of premium products and premium services for individual mobility. So where do we stand with regard to the business year 2011? We achieved group revenues of 68.8 billion euros, a pre-tax result of 7.4 billion euros, a profit of 4.9 billion euros, an EBIT margin in the automotive segment of 11.8%. Our motorcycle segment contributed 41 million euros to the group result, and our financial services segment accounted for 1.8 billion euros. These key figures are proof of our product's desirability and the strength of our brands. For the first time ever, within 1 year, about 1.67 million customers decided to buy a BMW, Mini, or Rolls-Royce. And this means new record sales for all our brands. BMW, 1.38 million cars. Mini, over 285,000 cars. Rolls-Royce, 3,538 cars. So we exceeded the previous record from 1978 and reached a new all-time high in Rolls-Royce's 107-year history. Motorcycles. We sold more than 113,500 motorcycles of the BMW and Husqvarna brands. BMW Motorrad, winner of the J.D. Power Motorcycle Competitive Information Study 2011, is now the market leader in 15 countries. In 2011, the BMW ordinary share held strong in a challenging and volatile environment and proved to be a sound long-term investment. All in all, the share price developed better in 2011 than the German DAX. And since the beginning of 2012, it has increased in value by more than 30% over the 2011 closing price. Our shareholders benefit from our positive business development in 2011, and so do our associates who participate in the employee share program. At the annual general meeting, the management board and the supervisory board will propose to raise the dividend to 2 euros and 30 cents per ordinary share and 2 euros and 32 cents per preferred share. This is the highest dividend we have ever paid. This holds true for the employees' profit-sharing program. All permanent staff at German locations will receive a bonus for 2011 that exceeds the previous record set in 2010. I'm convinced that all associates will once again demonstrate peak performance in 2012. It will be a challenging year, and we will need to deliver once again. That brings me to my next point. What are our goals for 2012? But before that, whether or not the economic momentum will continue is uncertain. In addition, there is the concern about the stability of the financial systems and the national debt. Our expectations for 2012 are new record sales on group level, new all-time highs for all three car brands, a new record in pre-tax group result, and an EBIT margin in the automotive segment in the range of 8 to 10%. And we are off to a promising start. This is the best start to any year we've had. In January and February, we delivered nearly 240,000 cars to customers. Our product portfolio is young and attractive. Before the summer ends, BMW and Mini are going to launch 12 new models, including variants. At BMW, 2012 is clearly the year of the new BMW 3 Series. The new sedan arrived at dealerships in February. For the first time, we launched the model at the same time in all markets. We were delighted with the media response. So far, the new 3 Series has come out first in all comparative tests against competitors worldwide. Our 3 Series has always been an efficient dynamics pioneer. The BMW 320d Efficient Dynamics Edition is the new CO2 champion in its class. 163 horsepower, fuel consumption at 4.1 liters per 100 kilometers, and 109 grams of CO2 per kilometer. Efficient Dynamics is a success story. Efficient Dynamics makes our cars even more attractive and keeps their value at a high level for a long time. We want to maintain and strengthen our lead in the future. Let's take a look back. What did we achieve in the first phase of Efficient Dynamics? In 1995, our fleet average in Europe was over 200 grams of CO2 per kilometer. From 1995 until 2008, there was an agreement among EU car companies to reduce average car CO2 emissions by 25% across the fleet. We were the only car company in ACEA that fulfilled our promise. What's more, we went beyond this goal, and at present the BMW Group fleet in Europe emits an average of 140 grams of CO2 per kilometer. At the same time, we increased performance as the average of 173 horsepower shows. Looking ahead at 2015, the EU has set a new CO2 target of 130 grams per kilometer for all European cars. We are totally confident we will meet the targets set for the BMW Group. Our new highly efficient engines and new models such as the new 3 Series will enable us to achieve these goals. As well, the BMW active hybrid models are another step in this direction. Our intelligent full hybrid drive concept will be available in the BMW 3 Series, the BMW 5 Series, as well as the updated BMW 7 Series. Now we have a clear focus for the year 2020. This year, the EU will discuss the planned regulations concerning the 95 grams CO2 per kilometer as an average across the European car fleets for 2020. This is a significant challenge. Looking at the global situation, the US government has already set new CO2 targets for 2025. Our efficient dynamics technologies put us in a better position regarding these new regulations. Offering electric cars will also give us additional credits. In order to reach all of these goals, we are now starting on the second phase of Efficient Dynamics. We want to maintain our product portfolio mix and continue offering our customers both large and small cars in the future. Because of this, we need new technologies to complement the fleet. Through plug-in hybrids and electric cars, the BMW i family, we will make further progress, significantly reducing CO2 emissions across our fleet in 2020. We will have reduced the BMW Group fleet's CO2 average by half. Natural, to achieve these targets in Europe and worldwide, we will continue investing throughout the group in many areas. This includes developing innovative drive technologies and lightweight construction. Let's move on to the next point. Does premium have a future? Our activities are based on the following assumptions. Individual mobility will remain a basic human need. The number of wealthy individuals continues to increase globally. Naturally, this leads to stronger demand for premium mobility. Currently, growth in the premium segment exceeds that of the overall car market. Premium's key strengths, quality, product substance, and design will continue to be in high demand. We have been adding new attributes to the mix, such as efficiency, responsibility, and sustainability. The number of young drivers is increasing. According to a recent study of the Institute for the Automotive Industry, in Germany, the share of 18 to 24-year-olds applying for a driver's license has risen to almost 3 out of 4. 5 years ago, the number was much lower. Ladies and gentlemen, premium is and will remain our business model. We will continue to define premium and refine our business model accordingly. Let me give you four examples. Innovation and sustainable production, balanced market performance, strategic alliances, safeguarding expertise. First, innovation and sustainable production. Our industry is experiencing a period of technological transition. We want to be both a pioneer and a driving force in this transition. Therefore, we are achieving this through two distinct and complementary paths, evolution and revolution. The further development of high-efficiency combustion engines and hybrid drives. This is what we consider evolution. Zero-emission mobility combined with production and the innovative use of materials and new services. This is what we call revolution. With our new BMW i family, we position ourselves as the leader of innovation in the field of e-mobility, particularly starting in 2013. We are the first car company to design mobility from the ground up around electric power, and we will be the first cars made of carbon fiber in series production. And we are convinced that sustainable mobility can only be achieved with sustainable structures. The basis for ecological and economical action will be our economical success. In all sustainability rankings, we have held top positions, among them the Dow Jones Sustainability Index and the Carbon Disclosure Project. In our campaign, we have shown, our associates have shown how we implement sustainability measures at our facilities. New forms of mobilities enable new services, and there's a new way to include
In cooperation with research partners in cities, we are developing innovative services, giving young people in particular access to our brands. More than 7,000 members to date take advantage of our Drive Now car sharing project in Berlin, Munich, and Düsseldorf. Further cities are going to follow. The acquisition of the In-Car Lease Group has been another important step in designing attractive mobility solutions and services. Secondly, balanced market performance. Today, our market position in Europe, Asia, and America is far more balanced than was the case 10 years ago. And this gives us a very significant competitive advantage in light of volatile markets. We are now laying the foundation for our high growth targets for 2016. The BMW Group will define 2012 as the year in which we further extend our global footprint. We will raise capacities in China, the USA, South Africa, and India. And at the same time, we're evaluating potential locations in the BRICS markets. In these five BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, Korea, and Turkey, we have increased sales in the last 10 years by 1,000%. We are deciding on new locations. When we make these decisions, we always consider long-term perspectives. Basis conditions, and this is very important, need to ensure a win-win situation both for the country and for us as manufacturers. Germany remains the backbone of our production. We are not outsourcing jobs abroad. 2011 and in 2012, we will invest 2 billion euros in our German plants. Thirdly, strategic alliances. Future mobility has many elements, and that is what we are preparing for. Three examples. In the cooperation with the SGL Group, we opened a new production plant for carbon fibers in Moses Lake in the United States. And in Landshut, we have just gone into operation with the first carbon fiber production. We have expertise using carbon fiber parts in automotive engineering, and that gives us a competitive advantage in lightweight construction. Our joint venture with PSA, Peugeot Citroën, is on the right track, and together we are developing components in the field of electrification and hybridization. We intend to take basic research into lithium-ion technology to the next level in cooperation with Toyota Motor Corporation. At the same time, we will provide Toyota Motor Europe with high-efficiency diesel engines. Strategic alliances are part of our strategy number one. And this ensures us access to technologies. We pool expertise and we generate positive cost savings and synergies. Fourthly, safeguarding expertise. To achieve our goals for future mobility, we need the smartest minds and the most suitable skills. And that is why we're hiring new staff. That is why we are increasing the number of young people we train, and that is why we're investing more in continuing education for our employees. In 2011, we hired more than 4,000 new associates, and that is how we ensure our skills for the future. This year, we are planning to bring on a similar number of new employees. One topic that is very important to me is the training of young employees. During the economic crisis, we continue to train on a very high level, and a significant number of young people. In late 2011, we actually raised the total number of apprentices to 3,900. And all apprentices who successfully completed their training in 2011 were offered a job within the BMW Group. At the same time, we're investing in the continued education of our associates. In 2011, 87,000 associates participated in programs offered by our training academy. Our spending on training courses reached the highest level in 7 years in 2011. Within 2 years, they actually doubled, and that is premium as well. A future-oriented business model, Primil, requires a flexible, high-performing organization. Last Thursday, the supervisory board announced a realignment of the management board. The new management board structure beginning the 1st of April 2012 will set the course for our company's future development. By separating the responsibilities for the brands BMW and MINI and Rolls-Royce, we are focusing on the dynamic growth and the autonomy of our brands. The current board members in charge of the development and purchasing divisions will change roles, and this guarantees the best possible use of experiences in the respective place in the value chain. And as we brought in a seasoned executive with external expertise and new perspectives to join our board, Ms. Milagros Cafinha Andre will start on July 1st of this year. Ladies and gentlemen, what can we expect for 2012? At the Geneva Motor Show, we provided the stage for the world premiere of the first ever four-door coupe in the history of the BMW brand, the BMW 6 Series Grand Coupe. This car is our vision of aesthetics and luxury in the premium segment. The BMW X6 and our flagship model series, the BMW 7 Series, have been updated, and BMW M is launching the BMW M6 Coupe and the BMW M6 Convertible. Our new BMW M performance models are geared towards customers looking for high performance for everyday use. The MINI family consists of the Roadster, bringing it to 6 members in total. And from fall 2012, the MINI fans will look forward to a special model, and a special edition, the MINI Club Van. This is the first lifestyle transport vehicle in the premium small car segment. And Rolls-Royce is about to launch the Phantom Series 2 in the second half of 2012, following the Phantom Series 1 from 2003. And that means an updated design, new top technology, and state-of-the-art networking services at Rolls-Royce. As you can see, our product portfolio covers the entire range from the premium small car segment right up to the ultra-luxury class and the M models. Ladies and gentlemen, corporate success builds on many individual factors. As we see, it includes growth, profitability, and efficiency, as well as social responsibility and acting sustainably. We are success in the business year 2011 to the committed performance of our associates. So on behalf of the entire management board, I would like to thank all our associates across the globe for their commitment and their performance. We continue to implement our strategy number one, which allows us to think and act globally and to focus on a long-term perspective. We will continue to define what is premium. We will strive to be highly profitable. We will continue to design individual mobility for today and tomorrow. And this is the foundation on which we build the future of our company, as well as shape our industry. Everyone at the BMW Group will strive to achieve these goals with dedication and passion. That is BMW. Thank you very much. Mr. Eichen, I would like to ask you to give your speech. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Our results demonstrate once again how successfully we have realigned our company since 2007. Our profitability has improved significantly, and we are now using our financial strength to prepare for the future. Last year, we benefited from strong demand for our attractive premium vehicles. Our premium business model is solid and ready for growth. Before we look at the numbers in greater detail, I would like to draw your attention to a change in our group balance sheet. In 2011, we altered the method we use for the evaluation of leased products, i.e., the vehicles we have leased to our customers. The automobiles and financial service segments are not affected. We've just corrected certain items of our balance sheet. Further information can be found in our annual report on page 95 under item 8. So let me move directly to the automotive segment. Automotive revenues climbed to 63.2 billion euros in 2011. That is an increase of 17%. We reported an operating result, EBIT, of almost 7.5 billion euros in this segment, and that represents an increase of 72%. The EBIT margin in the automotive segment was 11.8% on the cutoff date, and exceeding our target range of 8 to 10% very clearly. In the fourth quarter of 2011, we generated revenues of more than 16.8 billion euros in this segment, and this represents an increase of 8% year on year. Our EBIT of 1.54 billion euros is slightly below the previous year, and this is due to higher expenses for new products, amongst others for the start of production and the market launch of the new 3 Series sedan. In addition, there was an impact of currency and raw material derivatives. In the fourth quarter, we had a single-digit EBIT margin, as expected, of 9.2%. Here you can see what contributed to this increase in the past year. The most important factor were higher sales, combined with our high-end model mix. The strong momentum from our products is also reflected in the average revenue per vehicle, which increased once again. Furthermore, we achieved better prices. Sales incentives were again slightly lower than the previous year. A positive net effect of currency and raw materials produced a gain of 92 million euros. While rising raw material prices posed a burden, we were able to benefit from favorable currency hedges. All in all, we were able to overcompensate the negative effects. The strategy will be continued in the next year, and we are assuming that this year we will again have a positive effect due to strong currencies. In the raw material sector, we are likely to have adverse impacts once again, although positive effects from currency hedging should offset this. More stable used car prices in 2011 allowed us to adjust some of the risk provisions we had accrued for our end-of-lease vehicles, and this had a positive impact of 85 million €1.5 billion on earnings in the automotive segment in the second quarter. Segment earnings were impacted by additional €247 million in personnel costs, mostly for higher profit sharing and employee bonuses. Efficiency improvements and lower manufacturing costs also had a positive impact. The measures implemented as part of our corporate strategy contributed over €500 million, mainly triggered by the launch of new models. Wider use of modular components leveraged synergies and economies of scales and further reduced our manufacturing costs. We will continue to optimize our cost base over the coming years. Compared to the previous year, expenses for new products and the development of new business areas rose significantly. This included further development of our traditional drivetrain technologies, as well as alternative drivetrains and the use of new materials. An additional €468 million of costs were spent for future business projects in the automotive segment. This impacted our fourth quarter earnings in particular, beyond the typical seasonal impacts. A substantial portion of the costs came, for example, from upfront investment in the new BMW i sub-brand and the upcoming fully electric BMW i3, as well as the BMW i8. Ladies and gentlemen, as Dr. Reithofer already discussed, we are developing the BMW groups in two directions, evolution and revolution. And this dual approach is aimed at making BMW the world's leading premium car manufacturer worldwide. We are investing in our future today. We are taking the necessary steps to be able to refine and further develop our business model. We have the operational and financial strength to shoulder these expenses. We have reached a high level of profitability and had already exceeded our profitability targets for this year by the end of 2011. Despite rising upfront investments, we expect to continue to meet our profitability targets going forward. Our investments are mostly funded by our own operating cash flow. Year on year, it was impacted by the accumulation of around €1.2 billion in working capital for the large number of model launches. In the fourth quarter, in particular, we increased stock and provided an adequate supply of vehicles. Nevertheless, we once again generated a strong free cash flow in the automotive segment, which amounted to €2.13 billion in the fiscal year 2011. As you can see, three major capital outflows reduced the free cash flow in the automotive segment. First, the capital increase in the BMW Bank of €625 million in the second quarter. And secondly, the prorated acquisition of the Ing Car Lease Group, which also resulted in the outflow of €249 million in the third quarter. And finally, the purchase of SGL shares in November with an outflow of €487 million. Adjusted for these items, free cash flow totaled €3.5 billion, thus achieving a target of €3.3 billion.
Group liquidity amounted to roughly €10.1 billion at the end of the year. This increase in liquidity from 2010 was secured primarily in the second half of the year. This gives us greater flexibility in the face of sustained uncertainty on the capital markets. We attach a great deal of importance to maintaining an adequate level of liquidity and stable financial base. Both enable us to respond to market fluctuations in a fast and flexible manner. Last year, we renewed our syndicated facility of more than €6 billion with an international banking group, which can be accessed at any time. We also continue to enjoy excellent access to various refinancing sources in the capital markets. In light of our positive business and earnings performance, we will once again be returning more of our profit to shareholders than last year. This year's dividend payment totals 1.5 billion euros and is therefore more than 75% higher than last year. This amount represents 30.7% of our net profit for the year. We optimized our capital employed once again in 2011 and created headroom for investing in key future projects. Our CapEx totaled 3.7 billion euros. Due to the increase in revenue, the investment ratio of 5.4% remained the same as the previous year and below our upper limit of 7%. We invested in machinery for new models to enable future growth. At the same time, we focused on efficient processes and reutilizing existing machinery. We also started with the creation of the necessary production structures for the BMW i3 and i8. We also made our development processes even more efficient. We are now developing a growing number of derivatives in a shorter space of time and with lower one-off costs. In doing so, we will rely on modular components as well as virtual simulation and safety technologies. This gives us the additional financial latitude to invest in the future. Last year, we reported a charge in the three-digit millions for key future projects on our income statement, as many of these expenses are not eligible for capitalization. In 2011, our expenses for research and development totaled more than 3.6 billion euros. The R&D ratio of 4.9% was higher than the previous year's figure of 4.6% and just below our target range of 5 to 5.5%. We invested a total of about 500 million euros more in research and development than in 2010. We expect R&D expenses to continue rising over the coming years and foresee higher capital expenditure. However, our cooperation with other companies will generate synergies and cost benefits. Within the company, we are working on modular kits for components, electrification, and engines. The main R&D challenge lies in our multifaceted approach in developing drive technology. As Dr. Reithofer explained, we have initiated the necessary measures that will enable us to meet European emission standards in 2015. We are preparing for even stricter requirements from 2020 on. We want to maintain our leading position in CO2 efficiency. In doing so, we will continue to offer our customers in the EU a broad product mix. Our efficient drivetrains and lightweight construction will ensure that our customers will not have to do without larger cars or sheer driving pleasure. We are maintaining our target ratios for capital expenditure and R&D over the medium term. We are confident that we will be able to meet both target ratios, a CapEx ratio of less than 7% and an R&D ratio of 5 to 5.5%. Now, let's take a look at the financial services segment. This is another area where we exceeded our targets. Pre-tax earnings for 2011 reached 1.79 billion euros. This figure includes a one-off effect of 439 million euros from the adjustment of risk provisions. The segment boosted its profitability once again on the basis of our balance sheet equity of more than 7 billion euros. Financial services earned an ROE of 29.4%. Adjusted for the one-off effect from the adjustment of risk provisions, I mentioned before, the ROE was 22.2%. Thus, financial services easily exceeded our group target of over 18% for return on equity. financial services also profited from competitive refinancing conditions in the capital markets in 2011. Low interest rates and, in particular, lower credit spreads in the first half of the year enabled our financial services business to deliver solid profitability. The risk situation for the segment continued to improve after the financial crisis. Our measures aimed at supporting residual values and in our lending business also had a positive effect. Moving on to our business activities in this segment, we concluded almost 1.2 million new contracts with re-customers in 2011. This represents a 10.5% increase over the previous year. The number of contracts in place with dealers and retail customers reached almost 3.6 million in 2011. This also includes almost 253,000 contracts from the ING Car Lease Group. The total business volume, as disclosed in the balance sheet, increased by 13.6% to 70.2 billion in 2011. The penetration rate for the financial year just ended was 41%. The overall risk situation in the financial services business continued to improve also in 2011. The used car markets in North America have further stabilized. In the United States in particular, residual value losses were much lower than in previous years and ended below the previous year's level. The German market also remained stable, and residual value trends now look better than before the crisis. So the southern European countries, on the other hand, saw a negative development overall in the used car markets. Residual value losses increased again over the course of the year, but were still within the predicted range and covered by the corresponding risk provisions. In recent years, we've been more conservative in our calculation of residual values when concluding contracts and have consistently reduced the number of off-lease vehicles. Unless the economic situation in our key markets changes drastically, we expect used car market prices to remain mostly stable. The credit risk situation continued to improve, too. Our worldwide credit loss ratio fell to 0.49% in 2011, a significant decrease of 18 basis points from the previous year. For the first time since the crisis, the credit loss ratio was almost back at pre-crisis levels. BMW Financial Services underpinned this development with consistent receivables management. We expect a continued stabilization overall in credit and residual value risk in 2012, although the risk situation will remain heightened in the southern European countries most affected by the debt crisis. In light of this, we increased our risk provisioning in the fourth quarter. Our goal remains to have a robust financial services business with access to competitive refinancing. That is why we are proceeding to expand the BMW Bank into a European bank. This will allow us to make better use of customer deposits in our financing mix, for instance. Our German leasing company was successfully integrated into the BMW Bank in August 2011. Our acquisition of the ING car lease in 2011 expanded our fleet management business significantly. Over the course of the year, our joint vehicle portfolio grew by almost 9%. Alphabet had almost 475,000 vehicles in its portfolio at the end of 2011. The integration of the ING Car Lease Group is proceeding according to plan. We expect to complete the integration process over the course of the coming year. For BMW Motorcycles, sales performed extremely well in 2011. The motorcycle segment increased its revenues by over 10% to 1.4 billion euros in a declining overall market and despite negative effects. As expected, the segment's EBIT decreased to 45 million euros. This resulted from the high cost of restructuring Husqvarna and repositioning the brand. These activities are at an advanced stage and the brand portfolio has been refined. We anticipate further growth in the motorcycle segment as a result of offering new models in growing market segments. For the first time, the Husqvarna brand launched two new street bikes outside of its traditional off-road market in December. BMW Motorrad will move into the area of urban mobility in 2012 with two maxi scooters. In the eliminations, profit before tax decreased to 1.1 billion euros year on year. The negative effect resulted largely from eliminations of financial services inter-segment profits, driven by growth in new leasing business, lower manufacturing costs, and higher profitability of new vehicles. Ladies and gentlemen, the BMW Group remains confident about the future. Our strong 2011 financial results confirm that the company is on the right track. We aim to continue along this route, and we are targeting further cost reductions and improvements in efficiency. Our profitable business will enable the investment needed for key future projects over the next few years. From a strategic perspective, we will continue to forge ahead with both evolution and revolution. The measures we have implemented with strategy number one over the past 5 years and the steps we have taken will ensure we will achieve our targets. We will be able to maintain our target quotas for research and development and capital spending despite the high level of upfront investment. We've already set our goals for 2016. We will aim to sell more than 2 million vehicles in this period. We will renew about two-thirds of our product portfolio. We will continue to offer attractive new products, which will benefit from our efficiency improvements. Despite the necessary expenditure ahead, we aim to remain profitable at a high level. We will maintain our EBIT margin target range of 8-10% in the automotive segment. Due to the cyclical nature of our business, very few car companies have so far managed to achieve such a high level of profitability on a long-term basis. This is an ambitious goal we are aiming for, provided conditions remain stable. Our goal is long-term and not just focused on earning the highest possible short-term returns. With the level of investment and outlays we are making today, we are paving the way for our company's sustainable future success. If conditions are right, that will, of course, also benefit our profitability. We aim to increase both our sales volumes and earnings again this year, with our three premium brands once again growing faster than the global premium segment. We anticipate new sales records from all three brands. Our new and attractive products will generate further growth. We have a young product lineup on the market this year that will support our earnings momentum. Sales performed very well in the first 2 months of 2012. If the current trend continues, we expect increasing earnings in the automotive segment and the EBIT margin to be at the upper end of our 8-10% target range. The launch of BMW i and the new BMW i3 and i8 will result in rising costs this year. Our ventures into new markets and business fields will also require additional expenditure. For this reason, we anticipate higher capital expenditure and upfront investment in 2012. Key future projects are likely to result in a negative impact on earnings stronger than last year. BMW Financial Services will contribute to our overall sales performance. We anticipate further growth in this segment. Earnings are expected to remain under the 2011 level with its substantial one-off effect. We are standing by our ROE target of more than 18%. In our motorcycle segment, we expect to see an increase in sales. Sales since the beginning of this year have gone exceptionally well. Overall, we are also aware of the volatility on the markets as well as current signs of market weakness. We expect to see a positive trend in the United States and China, as well as the Asian growth markets. However, in Europe, particularly in southern Europe and in certain emerging markets, we expect restrained growth. In the BRICS markets of Brazil and Turkey, for example, only moderate growth is forecast as a result of high import duties. Ladies and gentlemen, strategy number one has made our company much more flexible and resilient during volatile times. We have become more profitable. We need to capitalize on our current competitive advantage by making the company stronger for the future. At the same time, we are carefully managing risks and ensuring that we remain highly profitable with a solid financial standing. Thank you very much. Right. Thank you very much, Dr. Eichinger. Ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, this brings us to our question and answer session. Please, let's have a show of hands and use the microphone in front of you and press the button if you want to ask a question. As is customary, Mr. Kronik of Börsen-Zeitung will start. Good morning. I have several questions. It's about burden on earnings in the fourth quarter. There was a significant downturn in the automotive segment due to burden on securities and derivatives. And how will this continue? Do you have a regulation in place there for 2012? The next point would be the decision regarding to your facility in Brazil. When is this going to be made? It was scheduled for November originally. And could we have some more concrete details on sales in China and the United States? Thank you.
Well, I think we'll start with Dr. Eichinger. He's going to talk about the negative impact Q4 automotive. These are fair value valuations for raw materials derivatives and for currency derivatives, which we use for hedging. And here, the closing price on the cutoff dates are very important. The dollar price was 130 at the cutoff date, and that means that we have negative impacts on the hedges, for example. And similar happened with some raw materials derivatives, for example, aluminum. In the fourth quarter, where there was a very marked dip. These are cutoff date effects which could be completely different in the next quarter. Let me just remind you, in the raw material sector, we had positive effects during the year due to price developments, and now at the end of the year, it went in the other direction, i.e. down. So I think we will have to live with that. That is part of our hedging strategy. And the second part of the question regarded the plant in Brazil. Mr. Arndt, could you answer that question? I'm very happy to be able to say I have a very clear picture of what this plant should look like, but that is not sufficient to take a decision here. We have to discuss with the Brazil government, and we come to an agreement. And as Dr. Reithoff already said, we have to achieve a win-win situation for both parties. And since the Brazilian government is in the process of reviewing a whole lot of regulations, the situation isn't clear enough to be able to take a decision at the moment. But I can tell you that we are in very intense discussions, and I'm very confident that we will arrive at an agreement. Third part regarded sales in China and the United States. Ian Robertson.
Growth in the United States last year, reaching well over 16% segment share. Final sales were around 250,000 for BMW and around 58,000 for Mini. This year has started well as well. In China, we ended in total with around 235,000. It was just shy of 37% growth. And again, sales in China have started well in 2012.
Vielen Dank, Nick.
Thank you very much, Nick. Person, Mr. Fass, and then Mr. Fromm. I would like to talk about China to begin with. Your competitor last week in Ingolstadt announced that in the next 3 years it would arrive at 700,000 cars. I hear that you're far more skeptical as far as China is concerned. Are you just slowing down your sales in China? You've grown very dynamically in recent years there. And are you going to accept that you will be overtaken by Audi in China? First question. And second question relates to the negotiations between you and the Works Council as far as temporary staff is concerned or subcontracted employees are concerned. What are your expectations in these discussions and what do you think will be an acceptable number of subcontracted employees? Thank you very much, Mr. Fasser. Mr. Reithofer will answer the question on China. Of course, we're not slowing down our activities in China. If you look at our figures, Ian Robertson just mentioned them, by 2011, we only grew by 37%. That is very good growth. And that means we are on the same level with one competitor. Another competitor was behind us in terms of growth. But I've emphasized several times that we on the board said that we want to have a balanced distribution worldwide. And balanced means United States, Europe, and Asia, first of all. And the more balanced you are, the more crisis resistant you will be, and that is what is behind our strategy. Of course, we want to continue to grow in China, and I think we've got really positive plans for the future. For example, if you look at the expansion of our plant in Domitici, Mr. Arndt will be able to say something about that. That shows that we're really banking on China as well, but at the same time, we're increasing our capacities in the United States. I said that earlier on. We are going to have more capacities in South Africa as well. We're going to do something in India. And we're looking very closely at our so-called BRICS countries and what we have to do there, what we are going to do in Russia, for example. And all in all, this has to create a balanced picture. And I think our colleague, Mr. Arndt, will be able to say about the plant structure in China so that you can see that here we're really moving in a positive direction. Very happy to do so. Our existing plants in Dadong, we've increased the capacities to 100,000 units at the end of the year, and I think that is a huge step if you consider that we started with 40,000 units. At the same time, we're expanding or building up our plant in Tichy, and here we're already building our first cars, and I'm very enthusiastic about the speed in which one can proceed in a country such as China to build up these types of structures. We are still working on building sites in some areas, but the technologies, bodywork, body construction, and logistics are already operating. The press is being built up at the moment. At the end of the year, the paint shop will be up and standing as well. So we'll be working. We will have another capacity of 100,000 units. So at the end of 2013, we will be able to manufacture 213,000 vehicles locally for the local market. And we're negotiating with our joint venture partners to increase its capacity to by another 100,000 units. So we will be able to manufacture 300,000 units by the end of 2014. And in addition, you have to look at the derivatives, for example, the big X models, the X7, or the small UKL vehicles, which we're also importing. So I'm not worried that in the future we won't be able to achieve high growth rates on the Chinese market as well. But let me just add, it is important that we don't only do that in one area, but that we make sure that we have a balance worldwide distribution. Dependencies are very dangerous for a company such as BMW and not positive, and this has to be dealt with as well and handled. The second part of the questions, negotiations with the Works Council regarding temporary staff or subcontracted staff. Mr. Krüger. Mr. Fassett, the first topic of the BMW strategy is high flexibility for increasing market demand and, of course, also for crisis situations, as we have experienced in the past. And the discussions that we're having with the Works Council at the moment are intensive and very trusting discussions. And here we're looking at overall flexibility. So this also consists elements for as the working hours account, and this is something that we use in the past as well. And also working our models and the controlling and steering of vacation time and overtime. and, of course, temporary staff. We want to come to a Works Council agreement which will cover the whole topic of overall flexibility during growth and crisis phases so that we can maintain the competitive edge of BMW. And the Works Council and management agree on that. And, of course, this will include an agreement on temporary staff. I don't want to say anything about that at the moment because we're still in negotiations, but let me just point out that in 2011 we also employed 4,000 new employees. Mr. Reithoff already mentioned that. And we have a similar, we're expecting similar new hirings this year. We've also expanded the training programs, and this year we've got 1,200 new trainees, and this is an increase of 10%. So these are programs for young staff, for new staff, and we're talking about new hirings and flexibility. Then Mr. Fromm. Just some additional questions. In the last 2 years, we didn't only talk about the automotive manufacturers of BMW, but also the engine suppliers. What is the future of these suppliers since Carbon Motors and Saab is no longer a topic? Have you got new plans? Are you looking at new customers? And secondly, General Motors and PSA have announced an alliance, and you also have a strategic alliance with PSA as well. Could you tell us what the consequences could be of this GM alliance, also in view of the fact that Opel is a GM subsidiary and might come into contact with you in one way or another? What could happen here? And thirdly, a personal question, Mr. Reithoffer. You are against of the women's quota. And with Kanya Andre, you've put somebody, a woman, onto the board. What do you expect will be the impact? I've never been against a fixed rate for women on management boards. Let me just start with that. But let me talk about the sale of engines. And I would ask Mr. Dräger to talk about Allianz PSA, and Mr. Reithoffer will talk about the number of women on the board. Mr. Dräger, let's start with the sale of engines. As part of our strategy number one, we've defined very clearly that we want to sell motors or engines. We've got a number of projects here, smaller projects. But last year, we came to an agreement with Toyota about the supply of diesel engines to Toyota Motors. And here, I think we are in very good position. We have a very good collaboration, which generates a win-win situation for both parties. And secondly, with PSA, we have a cooperation for engines. This is a 4-cylinder, 1.6-liter engine, and this is used in products by PSA and products of the BMW Group. So it is used for the current Mini models, and it is also used for models of the BMW 1 and 3 Series, the new 3 Series. Very good. PSA, Dr. Reithoffer. I can't say at this point what PSA is discussing with GM. I'm sure you'll understand that I'm not going to comment on that. I'm going to stay out of that. He would have to ask the CEO of GM or the CEO of PSA. But as far as we are concerned, we did have discussions, and we said that the motor or engine cooperation or alliance that we have is solid. We're going to continue with that. As Mr. Dräger just said, the engine that we're working on together will be EU6 capable, and that means it will be integrated into products up until 26 or 15. So we're very confident, as far as the engines are concerned, that we will have a very good and reasonable collaboration with both companies, or between both companies. Let me just also add, as you know, Mr. Dräger has also developed an engine module, and in future, 6-cylinder combustion and diesel engines will be based on a modular structure, and we will generate high economies of scale. And on our side, this is a program that will make our engine manufacturing more economical or profitable. And another point you mentioned, What could the alliance of GM and PSA mean for us? Independent of that, we had discussions and talks with GM. We didn't know about the other discussions. And they asked us in which areas could we envisage doing something together. And one area where we could consider a collaboration is the fuel cell, where GM has a lot of experience, where we also can contribute something quite essential, and where it would make sense that two companies develop that together. We are negotiating that at the moment. Nothing has been concluded so far. That is one thing. Will we do something with PSA and GM? At this point, I can't say anything. I'm sure you'll understand that, not because I don't want to say anything, but first of all, you have to look how all of this is going to pan out. What could this look like? I can't say anything about that at the moment. And the next point, the number of women on the board, Mr. Krüger will say something about that. I think it was a good decision to appoint Ms. Kanya André onto the management board. Why? Well, Ms. Kanya André has many years of experience as far as human resources are concerned, and in her positions in the past, she managed very complex and flexible working hours models, and she was also in the past responsible for the development of the management. She was on the board of Oslo, so she's got an experience of being on a management board due her position on the management board of Oslo. And since 2011, she's on the management board of the Schenker AG, and we think that this will reinforce us, especially in the HR segment, and I think this will also help us when we have to develop skills for the future. So here we've got a manageress who's highly qualified, has a lot of expertise. She's has a lot of experience of being on the board of a big DAX company, or medium-sized company in the past. So we've always said that we're against a very fixed quota. We're only against the fixed quota. And we said that women, just as men, if we want them to be top managers, they have to be developed from the bottom up, which means we send managers and manageresses on trips. They become head of department, head of divisions. They go abroad. They have central functions. They work in the individual plants. Let me just take one example. Ms. Bergmeier, for example, is head of transmission and axle department. She used to be the head of our vehicle assembly plant in Spartanburg, and before that, she had different positions. And this is how we consider, this is what we consider the right way to train and build up managers for the board. And now we're going to hear about the quotas. This was not an important aspect for Ms. Kanya André.
As Mr. Reithofer said, we are opposed to a fixed quota, but we are really in favor of commitment and self-set targets. And as DAX 3 project companies, we presented this. For this means for us is we want to have 15% to 17% in the exempt range by 2020. This is a very ambitious target because you have to consider that in the engineering field, we have our most part of our leadership function, and we have only 10% to 15% of women available in the engineering range, and yet we want to achieve this. We started successful measures, coaching and mentoring measures, but also succession programs. To give you an example, we are highly pleased because we have a management succession program for trainees where we have a target of 20% to 30% for a quota of women. Right now, we have achieved 37%, and we are looking at the inflow of university graduates that we want to join the company, and how we can better improve women within our company. But as Mr. Reithofer said, we want to fill the talent pipeline gradually, and I think we are on the right track here. But I would like to put this into context with another topic, because BMW, we believe in the diversity of our associates. This includes intercultural features. In Munich, we have more than 56 nations being represented, or at Munich here, more than 90. And we have three pillars like gender, age and experience, and internationality, and intercultural representatives. And we have a project Today for Tomorrow that is underway, where we want to exploit the potential of our more aged employees. And because we want to have employees also at higher age level, this is part and parcel of our corporate and sustainability strategies. Next two requests are Mr. Doll first, followed by Mr. Rührmeier. Mr. Doll, thank you very much. I have three additional questions. Mr. Reithofer, I didn't want to address GM and PSA, but your answer aroused my curiosity. You said you would look into that and then decide what to do. Does that mean there is a way, an possibility that you will join this coalition of the two, or would you rather withdraw from the whole project if they do that together? And you would also said, Mr. Reithofer, we're looking into various locations in the BRICT country. Are we talking about production or assembly plants? We already talked about South America. You briefly addressed India. Could you give us some more details on that? Another question addressed to Mr. Eichinger. You repeatedly addressed investments and costs for the I-Series. How much does BMW invest into this project? And if this is to start in 2020, from when can we make money, make a profit? When can we expect profits from that project? Let's start with Mr. Han. As regards BMW I models, we are not disclosing investments for individual types and models. We have never done that before, and you know our statements regarding overall investments, and we have given you the guidance that, notwithstanding the burden resulting from the new technologies and products, our investment ratios will remain below 7%. This is the statement for the automobile segment. And I think this is really a pretty good guidance. Of course, two new models constitute quite a burden that will be in the over and above the double-digit million range. And next question, when will we make a profit? Well, we are planning for all our models to have a positive contribution to profits. And we have always achieved good margins with our most recent new models. It will depend on the unit sales and on the compensation for the one-time effects. And this is very difficult to predict, because the forecasts are in the range of 5 to 10%, or 3 and 10%, for by 2020, and similarly volatile is our forecast for unit sales, and therefore it's difficult to give you any precise answer, and we will have to wait and see. Well, other locations, Mr. Arndt, please. Well, I am pleased to say that in the BRIC markets, we are already very active. As I said earlier, in Brazil, we are in close coordination and talks. We do know the structures of future plants. In India, we have just increased capacities from 3 to 10,000. To 11,000, with more potential for increase. I think we are very active there already. In Russia, we are the premium manufacturer who has the longest record, and we have a partner after Top, and we are also in close negotiations with them. And in recent years, I negotiated with Prime Minister Putin on how to further expand our presence there, but due to the new government being established and because we have to create a new situation with a new partner there, coordination is required. So three of the five BRIC countries where we are working intensely on further growth. Independent of all these projects, of course, we have to see how we manage additional growth in the future. And I think this is part of our professional approach when it comes to looking for new locations for a full range plan. It depends on various factors like political conditions, and the area and the supplier structure must be in place. And if we want to have a full range plan we also have to consider tariffs for exports from there. This is an important factor for any location, and we are looking in various locations. It's an ongoing process, and we will have to continue like this also in the future. You have to be prepared, and you must not be surprised by reality. Dr. Reithofer, GM and PSA, it's too early for that. Neither in one direction nor in the other direction can I give you an answer. It's too early for that. Let's talk about that maybe in 6 months' time, but right now I cannot give you an answer. It's not that I don't want to. I simply cannot. So next request to speak from Mr. Rührmeier, followed by Mr. Wagenheim-Hermann. Mr. Rührmeier, I have three questions. For one thing, can you say something about the range of can you speak a little louder, please? Could you give us a range concerning the bonus that your employees may expect this year? And I would also like to know whether you believe that in the long term China or the United States will be the more important market to you, and do you expect a decline for all car manufacturers in China and competitors? Audi caught up pretty well. Why are you so confident, actually, that you will maintain your leading position there? I think we can break this up in two parts, answer by Mr. Krüger and the rest by Mr. Robertson. Our profit-sharing program and the bonuses will be higher than those in 2010, but we will not disclose any figures. And please understand, because Mr. Schoch and myself will disclose that to our workforce tomorrow. And this is a matter of style and culture at our company, that our associates should hear that from us first. And just roughly, will there be a major increase? There will be an increase, and it will be more than last year. Ian Robertson.
2011, the United States was clearly the biggest market for us with, as I mentioned earlier, you add Mini and BMW together, over 300,000 sales. China was around 235,000, so significantly behind. Clearly, the Chinese market has continued to grow in strong double digit over the last few years. We foresee that this year that will slow down somewhat, and therefore it's too early in the year to see what the final numbers would be. Having said all of that, you mentioned Audi. Well, Audi have been ahead of us in China for many years, and over the last couple of years, yes, they have been increasing their volumes also. But as you heard earlier from Frank-Peter Arndt, we have a very, very clear policy within the company and a strategic objective that, in essence, we will have a balanced growth around the world. That means Asia, that means the Americas, and that means Europe, as well as, of course, the fast-growing economies that Norbert Reithofer mentioned of BRICT and the next 10. Now, overall, I think that balanced position gives us a much better strategic platform on which to see our future business grow, rather than a pure focus on one particular area in the world.
Herr Reithofer, Sie wollten noch einen Zusatz machen?
Mr. Reithofer, you wanted to add something. I think, to me, it's important. If you make a comparison, and we don't always want to do that, because, first of all, you need to know how your own company is going to develop, in which direction, and what are your own objectives. And we said that by 2016, we want to sell more than 2,000 vehicles. And this also means, of course, that in the period, we need to have growth until by 2016 for the BMW Group. But At this point in time, I would like to mention one thing. How do you design this growth? Do you design growth in a way? How do you shape it? If you look at the lower comparison classes, including the meaning, where you position a product of your own within a brand that is also active in the mid and upper segment. And do you want to cover the whole range of products you buy one brand, like from an A1 to an A8? Or if you are a multi-brand manufacturer and where the A1 is located, this is what we cover using the meaning. And if we say that BMW is a multi-brand manufacturer covering the small car segment with the Mini up to the top luxury brand with the Rolls-Royce, then I must say we as BMW are not expanding our range down to the bottom. We cover this range already with our Mini. Now, if you still want to have a comparison, this means for 2011, 1.67 million cars as compared to 1.3 million cars. Next request to speak, Mr. Wagenheim-Hörmann, and then Mr. Yangtzan. My questions have all been answered by now, but maybe I may pass the floor to a colleague. Well, let's stick to our Mr. Yangtzan.
So, my question is, you just mentioned about the sales of BMW last year in China increased 37%. But back to 2010, this number is more than 80%. So in your opinion, which number is more real? And in your opinion, what's the highlight of BMW China Group, what did in last year?
Okay, vielen Dank. Ian Robertson.
As I said, we have seen very, very strong growth in the last few years in China, far more than I think any forecast, any analyst would have predicted. But we are definitely seeing the market slowing down somewhat. The volume car segment in China has slowed substantially in the last 6 months or so. Having said that, our product is very well accepted. Last year, we had exceptionally strong growth with our 5 Series long wheelbase, the new 5 Series. And clearly, as we come into this year, we have other products that will enter the market, namely the new 3 Series. So I think we can continue to see a developing business in China, but it will probably be at a slower rate than we've had in the last few years.
Good. Next.
Right, next request to speak, Mr. Krepper, followed by Mr. Murat. Mr. Krepper, please. By now, BMW has a production volume in Spartanburg, where you could also say that engine production would be worthwhile or would actually offer itself, and our competitor with the star has already announced that they want to start engine production in the U.S. Is this something that you are really considering to start a production line for engines, Mr. Art? In sum total, engine production has to match vehicle production, and we have triggered a large number of activities in order to increase our engine production capacity. Here in Munich, we have expanded our engine production to more than 500,000 units. In Steyr, we have reached more than 1.2 million units, and we have decided that we will also keep using our location in Helmsholm. Also, after the expiration of the cooperation for the engine modular systems, and we will have to consider a production site in the U.S. for engine. But I think it's a good idea to handle this step by step. It cannot be excluded that we open up an engine. Mr. Murat is next to be followed by Mr. Berg. I'm sorry. I forgot one item which is very important. Currently, we are expanding an engine production facility also in China. And there we will also have 200 to 400,000 engines more available. And so far you have to see that our engine network is really growing dynamically. Mr. Moore.
Question for Mr. Ian Robertson. Apart from the new showroom in Abu Dhabi that you mentioned last night, what other facilities or expansion projects are planned for the Middle East region in 2012, please?
Clearly, the Middle East has been going through substantial investments in the dealer body, both in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. We are extending our network in Saudi Arabia as well as the market continues to develop positively. And throughout the Middle East region, and particularly in the Maghreb area, we've seen recovery in recent times, albeit there are equally markets which have really been in somewhat difficulty for obvious political reasons in the last 12 months or so. So very much the Arab Emirates are in good shape. The development of the businesses are strong. The investments by the dealers are showing a confidence in the future. And we're delighted with the overall performance, which in the overall area is around 20,000 units now.
Vielen Dank, Herr Berg, und dann Herr Beetz. Herr Berg.
Mr. Berg, Mr. Beetz, Mr. Berg. Good morning. I would wanted to come back to the profit sharing program. Could you give us the percentages for 2010, and could you answer the question whether independent freelancing staff is also covered by this? Profit sharing last year was by 98%. That we had there, and profit sharing for is only paid to permanent staff.
Mr. Beetz, what are the plans for the future for the Bavarian locations as far as staff, new hirings, and the development of these plants are concerned? Let's start with Mr. Krüger. As already said, we are investing 2 billion euros into the German locations, and the HR situation on the German sites, according to the annual report, is all in all in the group. We grew by 5%. That also includes Germany. And yeah, last year we hired in the one or the other production area, for example, the expansion of the electric mobility in Leipzig. But in research and development, we also increased our staff. Some of the sales functions were increased, and financial services segment hired new staff. And this is going to continue because we want to ensure the competence. We have new technologies for lightweight construction, and we're recruiting people there as well. One focal point is the further training of our own staff. To ensure our future, we have expanded our further training activities and doubled them. We a proper qualification requires a campaign, so we are investing a lot in the further training of existing staff in order to be well-armed for the future. Mr. Zelig and then Mr. Köster.
As you may remember, you may follow, the Turkish Prime Minister and the Turkish government has recently declared that they would encourage a foreign automotive investment in Turkey. And most of car brands at the moment have their facilities and factories in Turkey, and the market is getting bigger and bigger. Do you discuss these issues with Turkish officials in these days? Is there any plan or idea to cooperate for a possible facility or factory for a car or a maybe engine and those kind of things? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ian Robertson.
As you heard earlier, we've seen substantial growth in Turkey over the last few years. Last year, we ended around about 15,000 plus another 1,700 or so minis, and that is almost double what it was just 2.5 years ago. You're right that the Turkish government has been encouraging manufacturers to look locally. Having said that, the market is still an open market, and there is something like 90% of local production is in what I would call the small car sector, vehicles with engines below 1.6 liters. That's where the development has been taking place. So I can clearly say at this point in time, we've had no discussions with the Turkish government along those lines, but we are continuing to develop our business there, and we will introduce a number of models with smaller engines in the months ahead.
Herr Köster und dann Herr Kim.
Mr. Köster and then Mr. Kim. In recent years, China reduced imports from other countries. Do you see this as a development? Do you follow this with a certain amount of concern? You're not talking about the BRIC countries, but you're talking about the BRICT countries without the C. Is it intentional that this C has been taken out? And is China no longer as important for you strategically? And another question regarding the competitor Audi. It is said to benefit from a modular strategy which will cover 42 models with millions of vehicles. And in view of the economies of scales which might entail or result from that, do you think this might be a difficulty for you as far as your competitive position is concerned? So let's ask Ian Robertson to talk about the market. As far as the modular system is concerned, Mr. Dräger is going to answer the question.
On the contrary, China deserves its own position. As I mentioned twice this morning, we have over 235,000 cars sold last year. And as you equally heard, we are continuing developing our plant business there, both in terms of manufacturing vehicles and manufacturing and engines. As regards the BRICT definition, which is very much a BMW definition, those five markets are what we viewed around about 3 years ago as the fastest growing potential markets in the world. And as Norbert Reithofer said in his opening discussion, over the last 10 years, we've increased sales there by around about 1,000%. And to put the numbers into that, that's from around 8,000 cars in total in those five markets in the year 2000 to well over 100,000 cars during last year. For us, what that tells you is that we are clearly looking at what could be the next big development markets over and above what China has been in the last 5-6 years or so. And China is now our third largest market in the world behind the United States, Germany, and then China. The United Kingdom comes in fourth position. So very much it is definitely not a move away from the strategic importance of China, but it is a move into the future, looking at what are the next markets that we should have a very strong focus on, both in terms of building our brand and ultimately seeing future success.
Der zweite Teil der Frage ging die
The second part of the question concerned the modular strategy of the group Audi and how we are positioning ourselves and are we going to be competitive, Mr. Dräger. I think we are very competitive. We don't talk as much about modular concepts and architectures because we believe that it is damaging only to talk about modular concepts and architecture to the clients. But if we take a closer look, we have architectures which have proven to be very successful. To give you a few examples, the 5, 6, and 7 series have a common architecture. They have a large number of common parts, or similar parts, and we can use this for the Rolls-Royce Ghost. So in the big vehicles, we've got a common architecture. And we've once and every now and again talked about the front drive architecture. And based on that, we are going to develop future models for the Mini brand and also for the BMW brand. And the third architecture, which is very important, are our engines. Mr. Reithofer already mentioned it, 3-cylinder, 4-cylinders, combustion and diesel engines with a uniform capacity of 500 cubic centimeters per cylinder, and that will help us in purchasing and manufacturing and in development and generate a lot of economies of scale. And on the other hand, it will also improve qualities. So I am very convinced that we are excellently positioned as far as modular concepts and architectures are concerned, but we don't talk a lot about it. and we don't underline differences between a 5, a 7 series, and a Rolls-Royce. Then Mr. Kim and Mr. Stahl. I just want to ask one question. In your presentation, you talked about strategic alliances and the importance of that. And in this context, at the end of February, the head of Samsung came here, and I heard that you met him. Samsung is a market leader in the field of batteries and also in the field of electronics. In Korea, one is speculating whether a joint venture or a cooperation is pending. And I would like to hear a few comments about that. And the second question is, the market share of Hyundai is becoming bigger and bigger. And Hyundai is trying to move into the premium segment, and I would like to hear your opinion on that. Regarding a possible collaboration with Samsung, Dr. Dees participated in these discussions. Dr. Dees, maybe you could give us some information on that. The company SB Limotive is a joint venture between the supplier Bosch and Samsung, and that is the main supplier of our battery cells for the products i3 and i8, and it has a considerable share in the value chain. Within this framework of this project, this visit took place, and the Korean delegation took a look at the vehicles to become familiar with the vehicles that are driven by their battery cells. Second part of the question regarded Hyundai, the market share of Hyundai, which is growing increasingly. Ian Robertson.
You're absolutely right that Hyundai as a company have been growing. They've been growing primarily, of course, in the volume car segment. Having said that, we as a company never underestimate any competition, and that's something which I think has proven very successful for us as we develop our business, as we look clearly into the future. And as you have heard this morning, we enjoy the number one position in the premium car market, and it is our clear intention to remain that way.
Good. Next.
Next question, Mr. Stahl, and then Mr. Leclerc. A few questions regarding your collaboration with SGL. How satisfied are you with your joint venture? Have your dreams been fulfilled? Also, as far as the integration of lightweight material is concerned in the aerospace industry with Airbus and Boeing, they had some difficulties. What is your situation? Is everything running smoothly? And when will SGL be amongst the majority shareholders, Ms. Cladden, and the other majority shareholder? Could you give us an idea? I would say the collaboration with SGL, that would be answered by Dr. Dreger. At the moment, we are in the process of developing the series i3 and i8, and when you move into a new material category in a big way, of course you experience new things which possibly you didn't expect. Nonetheless, I can say that with SGL, we're moving in the right direction in solving these problems. We are proceeding according to plan, and these kind of setbacks have already been included in the plan. And I can just say the collaboration with SGL is very open, very positive. Other than that, we wouldn't be proceeding according to plan. Second part of the question related to the shareholding of SGL. We do have a joint venture with SGL in the carbon segment, and that has existed for some years now. And the joint venture is very successful now. And what was important for us is that this joint venture be focused on a new material. And this means that strategically we've secured our own developments. I can't talk for Ms. Cladden. You have to ask her personally. And a joint procedure does not exist in this respect. Then Mr. Leclerc and then Mr. Prem. Dr. Reithofer, you already mentioned in your speech an average value of 130 grams CO2, which is the target for the EU, and you said the target value for BMW will probably be achieved. Where exactly is this target value, which BMW specifically wants to achieve? And secondly, you said the value of 95 grams CO2, which is being discussed and should be achieved by 2020. What is your estimation of this value, 95 grams? Will that be achieved by 2020? And what do you think about this figure as such? Is it appropriate, or do you think it's not limited enough? I would say Dr. Dräger would start with the technical aspects, and then Mr. Reithofer. Please bear with us. We can't give you an absolute value. That is due to the calculation. You know that the CO2 value for the individual manufacturers is based on the fleet and the value of the vehicle, which is a very important part of the equation. And since we don't know that exactly, we can't define this value exactly. We've made some general ballpark calculations, and we think that in view of the technical measures, we believe that for the combustion engine and the diesel engine, we think that we will be able to optimize the combustion. We will be able to reduce weight, improve aerodynamics, and the values that we are aiming at for 2015 and for 2020 will be achieved. Of course, the values for 2020 will be slightly above the 95 grams due to our fleet. Dr. Reithofer, let me go to the year 2020. And I don't want to start this discussion because we will do that in the framework of the ACEA. We will start this discussion there with the European Union in Brussels as well in order to discuss whether the 95 grams CO2 per kilometer are going to be introduced. Are there technical solutions that have to be integrated? Do they not exist? So this is going to be a whole package I don't want to talk about. But let me say something about the BMW Group. We are expecting this value of 95 grams of CO2 per kilometer is going to be introduced. I can only speak for our company. And let me just give you 3-year figures. The BMW Group has been positioned in such a way as if this value be, as if the limit value were introduced by 2012, and we were good to do that. And we've prepared ourselves for the value for 2015, and we're going to prepare ourselves and position ourselves for the limit value of 2020. And that is why we are doing things parallel, efficient diesel and combustion engines, at the same time additional features which we call efficient dynamics, such as the brake energy recirculation and so on. And that is why we believe that we will need several plug-in hybrids if we want to achieve this value for 2020. And not only will be able to sell minis with strong engines, but also be able to sell BMWs of the 3, 5, and 7 years. And that is why we need battery electric vehicles, i.e. vehicles such as the BMW i3. And we're assuming at the moment that there is going to be a development cycle of 7 years. We're in the year 2012, plus 7 will take us to 2019. And if we don't take the technological steps now, it will be too late in 2 years. So we are acting as if this limit value were going to be introduced by then. Mr. Prem and Mr. Pretzlaff. Mr. Prem, further training made me curious. Could you, Mr. Krüger, give us more detail? Where are these people being recruited from? Where do they go? Mr. Hofer said something in Lancet regarding CFK or carbon technology. Here you've trained people. Maybe you've got other examples where you've provided special training. We're happy to do so. For example, the academy that we have for electric mobility here, we have associates who are working in the mechanical engineering and in mechanics and need qualification for the electric technology and for electric mobility. In Bavaria, we're also working with the authorities and agencies and the chambers of trade to develop a technician for electric mobility. We're also qualifying skilled labor and engineers. We also have a training for university courses with the TU Munich and the University of Munich, for example. We have a bachelor and master courses, so that's a master can go to the university and obtain a bachelor in engineering. And we've got the Müller-Nagel program for construction engineers. So we've got a lot of qualification courses for at all levels, beginning from the skilled labor right up to the graduated engineer, so that they can obtain the necessary.
Next request to speak, Mr. Preslav, and then Andrea Malan. Two brief questions about cooperations. We've talked a lot about cooperation today, but not about cooperation with Daimler, with Mercedes. What's going on there specifically? Was there anything new last year, and what would be the amounts in euros or dollars? Second question, Mr. Reithofer, you said you were looking into an alliance with GM and talked about the fuel cell, but your other alliance partner, Toyota, is already very active in the field of fuel cells. Can it be excluded that you will do something together with them about fuel cells because they want to launch a fuel cell car by 2050? As regards cooperation with Daimler, Dr. Dietz, our cooperation with Daimler relates mostly to joint purchasing activities, and this has been common practice in the market and is also used actively by our suppliers, and we meet on a quarterly basis to discuss specification. This is what Klaus Dräger and I do together with our Daimler colleagues, and we request certain volumes in the market. We have discussed volumes. They are in the 1% range of the values of the cars, but it's growing continuously. But as regards fuel cells, Dr. Dräger, we are looking into hydrogen very closely. You may remember our Hydrogen 7, and we are really, we looked intensely into storage technology, but same applies to internal combustion engines. We have turned our back on that. We are only continuing working on the fuel cell course. We looked into that under various aspects, also including cooperation with OEMs. And right now, we are in intense discussions with GM. I cannot tell any more at this point in time. Next request to speak, Andrea Malan, and to be followed by Mr. Kron. Two questions concerning margins. In 2011, the margin, BMW's margin, was just slightly below Audi's. Is it the long-term strategy of BMW to be also the take the lead in profitability? And secondly, what are the reasons why this year the EBIT margin in the automotive industry will be declining by approximately 2 points. Thank you very much. Dr. Eichinger, please. As I have mentioned earlier, it's not, from our point of view, it's not about achieving top margins in the short run. It's about having a sustainable margin so we can invest in the future, as we said earlier. We said we need evolution and revolution at the same time. and we need to invest in plug-in hybrids, e-cars, lightweight constructions, and so forth. All this takes money. You have to develop, have to have a development effort. And yes, we will be able to shoulder this, and we will also take precautions for the future and up to 2020. And we still expect to have a return of 8 to 10% in the long run if the conditions stay stable and there is no major slump as we have seen it in 2009. This is our message to you. Of course, there are some years where things are where we are doing better or worse. This all depends on the very volatile environmental conditions, and it may be a difficult year when we make less of a profit. But we think that in the long run we can retain this trend and can also take precautions for the future. And thank you very much. It's 10 minutes to 12. I still have two requests to speak from Mr. Kronik and Mr. Kim. I have two more. Mr. Kim, you are already included. So let's start with Mr. Kronik, please. I have a few additional questions as regards the Husqvarna brand, which is clearly making a deficit. When will you make a profit there? Because, I mean, this is a major concern. I cannot quite explain this to myself. You bought the company several years ago and with major investments made. I have the feeling that things are not going too well there. The other issue is, as regards this shuffle among the members of the Board of Management, I don't quite understand this, in particular when it comes to purchasing and the development departments. Why do you do this? What's the reason for that? Because some years ago, there has been a reshuffle. That didn't work well either. Mr. Krause then left the company and joined Deutsche Bank. Okay, let's start with Husqvarna. Dr. Dräger, please. Well, when we bought Husqvarna, the motorcycle market was doing really great. And then we had experienced a downturn in the motorcycle market, particularly in Husqvarna segment. And that was particularly affected by this downturn. We had a downturn of more than 60% in the motorcycle segment. And this was also Husqvarna was hit by that. But we see a potential in Husqvarna to attract particularly young customers and establish a bond with them. And we have new models. The Nuda 900 really was met with great acceptance. And so far, we are confident that we will be able to restructure Husqvarna gradually. But you could see from Mr. Eichinger's figures that Husqvarna can shoulder this burden under its own steam. Dr. Reithofer, second part of the question. Well, the restructuring of the board, you have to see this in an overall context. And let's not just start with the reshuffling of positions. Instead, let's talk about what our intentions are with the three brands. When I started out at BMW, we sold slightly more than 400,000 cars, and there was just one company behind these 400,000 sales units. Now, by 2016, we will have a volume of more than 2 million units, and by 2020, this will be even more. So the BMW Group is moving into a totally different dimension as a company with our past structure. Now, if we look at this, we have a core brand called BMW, and we need to enhance the volume of this core brand and also in terms of technology. Then we have the premium brand in the small car market, the Mini, where we want to achieve a volume of no less than 400,000 units. I could also give you a different number, but I'm sticking to 400,000 units. And we want these brands to be more strongly positioned, also reflected on the board, also reflected in dealing with the public through a colleague who is focused on this brand. In this case, the new department headed by Mr. Krüger BMW, Mini, Rolls-Royce and Motorrad, and Ian Robinson on the other side is expected to focus entirely on the core brand of BMW. We call this project Future Retail internally, and Mr. Krieger is to focus entirely on Mini and after sales, because after sales, we're under our strategy number one, we have identified amounts in the billion euro range, and it requires the full focus of one of our colleagues, and that was the reason for this restructuring the board, and other companies have done this long before us. Second thing, as regards the reshuffling, we have to see that at BMW, the top management and also the department heads, that the next level below the board, on average, they change their positions every 3 to 6 years. Why is that? We want our top management to have an overall responsibility, that they have worked in various functions, like in purchasing, development or production, that they worked in central offices, and that they also worked abroad. And if you have a department head, for instance, who is tied down to a product line, then he can cover a whole range of functions. And in purchasing for the last 5 years, this was further developed in an excellent way by Mr. Dees. On the other hand, there's development headed for almost 6 years by Mr. Dräger. And both these gentlemen developed modular systems, Mr. Dräger as the head of development for front wheel and rear wheel drives for engines, Mr. Deal looked into cost reductions and the supply chain. And now they are exchanging positions and they bring their respective views. Mr. Dees will introduce his experience. And because a lot of development happens at the supplier side. And therefore, when we talk about development cost and how they rise, and what suppliers do to us in terms of industrial modular concepts. So both gentlemen, together with Mr. Arndt and Mr. Robinson, are the committee for operations, the executive committee. We think this is a proper and very good idea. And Ms. André, who will join as an additional member, the board as an additional board member, she already has HR experience and board experience. And we think that these things, Mr. Kronik, should be handled on the basis of a very good financial position. And this is where we are at. We want to keep developing the company. And please also understand this as a signal that BMW wants to be a flexible company. This should also be reflected on the board. And to us, this is also a signal with regard to our management teams that we want to have flexibility at all levels of management. And we are absolutely convinced that this will result in a major push forward. The two last requests to squeak are Mr. Kim and then Mr. Katasi. Mr. Kim?
When you met like, you know, executive members from, you know, Samsung, did they have offer any, you know, project ideas or something? Are you going to do, you know, do you have anything in mind that you want to do with, you know, Samsung in the future?
Also, I also attended the Samsung meeting, but anything you discuss in a confidential atmosphere, in a familiar atmosphere over lunch, is not meant to be disclosed to the public. Ms. Katasi, the last request to speak, please. Good morning. I would like to know whether the BMW Group has an interest in Ducati. And as regards Husqvarna, you said you wanted to restructure this company, that this restructuring process is going on. I would like to know whether you have any plan to relocate the Husqvarna production from Italy to some other location. As regards our interest in Ducati, maybe Dr. Dräger, we believe that with our product range here at BMW, with an S1000R and with the scooters that are going to be launched with a GS and the program that we are developing at Husqvarna, that we are very well positioned with all this. As regards a relocation of production from Italy, there are no such plans at present. Thank you very much, dear colleagues, and thank you so much for coming here. I would like to invite you all to lunch, and all the board members, and including myself, will also attend our lunch. Thank you very much.